We will start on the diamond, please, Darius. Robert White, a.k.a. Roberto Blanco, a.k.a. Bobby Blanco from the Bloncs, Mass and Sports. Bobby, all-star game last night. What'd you make of it?
I thought the ending was pretty awesome. I mean, you know, all-star games around the four major league sports are, you know, always debated whether or not they're actually good. And you're looking at, like, the Pro Bowl and, you know, not being football anymore. The NBA all-star is just a three-point shooting contest, essentially. And, you know, the hockey, they've been innovative recently. That's been more interesting. But I feel like the MLB all-star game has always been probably the best, most consistently enjoyable all-star game. And it delivered. You get a couple home runs from some big stars. And then when you have a late, you know, inning rally to tie it late, obviously they're not going to play extra innings because it's, you know, an exhibition game. But having a swing off, basically mini home run derby to decide the thing, I think was pretty exciting. So I was all for that. I had a good time watching last night.
What'd you make of the Nationals appearances? Mackenzie Gore going three up, three down in his inning. And then James Wood 0 for 1, but also participating in the home run derby.
Yeah, I was, you know, it was good that they both got in. You know, I mean, the Nationals having one of the worst records, yet getting two All-Stars into the, you know, afflict to the game was great. But I was kind of nervous that neither of them would actually play. You know, we saw the reports early in the afternoon that Mackenzie was going to get the fifth, and he came out there. I think he only threw like one or two pitches actually in the strike zone, but he got the three ground out, put up a zero. I was a little nervous there that he would be the one to caused the meltdown for the National League, but he got his three outs, which was good. Unfortunately that James basically reached on a fielder's choice and didn't get an actual base hit. But, you know, good experience for both of them. I think it was cool at the end of the night after Schwarber won the thing. You saw him, and my son is chiming in the background. James and Mackenzie kind of in the celebration. I mean, they're in the background of like a lot of the photos you saw from last night after the celebration. So it seems like they had a good time, which is the whole point of the thing, right?
What do you and what does your son think, respectively, about the Nats trade deadline coming up here in a couple of weeks?
I think Callum wants to sell everyone who can, and I kind of agree with him. Everyone who's on expiring contract, even if you're just getting, you know, a bag of peanuts back, this is the time I think you're kind of drawing it to do. They'll never say it, but you might as well do a mini reset, add some pieces to the farm system, talking guys like Michael Socorro, if you can get anything for him, maybe Paul DeJong, now that he's healthy and people are looking for a bat. I doubt you're going to be able to move like a guy like Josh Bell, but literally anyone on an expiring contract, if you can flip them, I would flip them. The big question, of course, is going to be Mackenzie Gore. Do the Nationals make a big swing there and try to move him at the deadline? I would expect them to answer every phone call they get about him and hear offers, but I would be surprised if they actually decided to move on from him at this point.
Who are some of the guys you're watching in the second half to see whether they're going to improve on their first half consistency, or who are some guys that you're going to keep a close eye on in the second half?
Well, obviously James, you know, I mean, that's not keeping a close eye. Everyone's going to tune in to watch James. Everyone, for as long as Mackenzie's here, everyone's going to tune in to watch Mackenzie pitch. You know, CJ should have been an all-star. He's worth a watch. I'm really tuning in actually to see, and hopefully we find out Friday, if Dylan Cruz is going to start a rehab assignment soon and then get back to the major leagues and be able to finish out the season healthy and productive. And we know he had a slow start to the year. We know he kind of struggled after making his debut last year. But remember, he's a big part of this core, young core moving forward. And we haven't seen him play for a couple of months now because of the oblique injury. And he was taking swings. He was taking full batting practice in Milwaukee over the weekend before the break. He's been able to throw from the outfield. So hopefully that means he's nearing a rehab assignment. Hopefully that rehab assignment can be pretty quick. Yep, and Callum agrees. And hopefully we can get him in back in the major league lineup and he can have a strong end to the season. That's what I'm looking forward to, seeing if he can bounce back before the offseason.
Similarly, what have you seen here from a couple of the kids, Dalen Lyle, and then, of course, Brady House there at third base with a nice two-homer game before the break?
Yeah, it was funny. Like I wrote about Brady's defense that day before the game, and you know I've been really pleasantly surprised with his glove at third base at the hot corner. You remember getting when he was drafted, you know everyone knew he had a power bat potential, but you know could he stick at shortstop? Would he even be a viable defensive option at third base because he's so big and athletic? And he's you know for a while his glove has been more impressive than his bat, and I think the bat is the part that we know is coming along. He hit the two home runs on Saturday. You know, I think he – bless you, Callum. I think he has been statistically one of the best they've only played a handful, but the best third baseman that the Nationals have played this year. So that's been a pleasant surprise. And Dalen, I mean, he has been putting together good at-bats. He had that, like, 12 or 13-game hitting streak just before the break, I think the week leading up to the break. So, you know, he's been able to stick around. I know he went down for a little bit but came right back up. You know, I mean, that's another good story for this Nationals farm system if he can stick around this season. I mean, when Dylan comes back, obviously a move's going to have to be made. Someone's going to have to clear space in the outfield for Dylan. But I think Dalen's proven that he is a good piece, maybe a trade piece down the line. I know they're kind of doing a reset, but, you know, he's proven that he could be a major leaguer. So that's a good sign for them.
Thank you, Bobby and Baby Blanco. Appreciate you joining us.
Oh, anytime. Say bye, Callum.
Baby Blanco and Bobby Blanco.
Baby Blanco from the Bronx. I love that.
That's awesome. Let's talk a little stadium talk, Darius. Joining us to talk about the stadium is Eric Flack from WUSA 9. Eric, it is July 16th, so we are past the deadline. What does that mean?
Well, it means that people are starting to get nervous around the stadium agreement between D.C. and the Commanders. I've learned today that Maryland and Virginia have both reached out to the Commanders about trying to get back in the game, so to speak, for building the team's new stadium in the wake of this exclusivity clause expiring with D.C. Basically, as part of the agreement between the mayor and the team, the D.C. Council had until July 15th, which was yesterday, to approve the agreement without the team, the Commanders, being able to talk to anybody else. That window has expired, so now we're not back to square one, but the Commanders are no longer legally bound to only talk to D.C. Now, this doesn't mean that the D.C. stadium deal is dead by any means. D.C. Council has raised a number of red flags, specifically about the $1.1 billion taxpayer price tag that is attached to this deal, and have indicated that they're going to need some time to kind of scrutinize it before they approve it. What that timeline is, nobody really knows. But what this does mean is that they're entering a phase where they're kind of playing with fire, I think one source kind of told me, where is, you know, the Commanders have to start making contingency plans for what would happen if this D.C. RFK deal just kind of falls apart.
So for me, if I'm D.C., I'm not threatened certainly by Virginia. I mean, it, you know, unless the Commanders need to see memes or something, like that's empty. Maryland, I don't get the sense that they're really ready with a serious offer that's even on the table. I wouldn't be threatened by this, but maybe that's just my own cynicism. Eric, your thoughts?
I think Danny, that the deal with Maryland is that they have a site. And that you're right about Virginia is that it's all pie in the sky because there's just no site. But, you know, Maryland has a site. And when you have a site, you have a chance. And so, you know, I read somewhere that, you know, publicly Wes Moore is saying, you know, we're not really focused on that. I think privately what I'm being told is that Maryland is just reminding the Commanders we are ready to go and ready to hammer something out if this deal falls apart. And I think, you know, there's a lot of timeline questions that are happening right now. I've been told today that, you know, if this vote extends past July, we're already talking about the stadium not being ready, even if it is in D.C. by the 2030 season, which was something that the team really, really wanted to see happen. But, you know, at a certain point, I think the team and possibly and almost certainly states like Maryland have to like be ready to go if in fact the unthinkable were to happen, which is that the deal just completely falls apart. And with, you know, politics and DC council specifically, I think unpredictability is the only thing that you can predict.
Yeah. I mean, so is that kind of the way that they're operating, that whatever their ultimate deadline is, obviously that July 15th deadline is passed, but whatever they set as the deadline that we can't wait any longer, are they just assuming they're going to get this thing done and they're going to go up until whatever they set that deadline is, and then if everything just falls apart, it's just going to be Maryland?
Yeah, I mean, I think that nobody wants, whether either the Commanders nor DC Council really want to see this deal fall apart. And I think the Commanders would even privately tell you that they're pretty far down the road and have already publicly stated their desires to return home to D.C. And so I think that there's going to be a lot of rope as far as, you know, how far this thing will go. So I don't think there's going to be a timeline where if they hit like, you know, October, let's just say, And the Commanders are like, forget it, we're going to Maryland if the deal in D.C. is still alive and hasn't been voted down. But I think, again, I think it comes back to contingencies. I think it comes back to successful business people always have to know what the plan B is, even if it's not, you know, their preferred, you know, option. And I think that's where we're at, is that we have gotten to the point now where the Commanders have to start making contingency plans, because a deal that they thought would have already been approved is now sitting with no approval and no real hard date or plan as to when it's even going to be taken up by D.C. Council.
Eric, thank you as always, buddy. Talk soon.
All right, see ya.
There he goes. That is Eric Flack, WUSA 9. Hit that local 53 sounder, please. Our guy Mitch Tischler, Monumental Sports Network. Mitch, where are you at? The Terry versus the team. What side are you on?
I mean, I'm 100% on Terry's side, given the caveat that the number that he's asking for doesn't start with a 4. This is a guy who has, you know, been there and done that with everything this team has asked of him and all of the different shenanigans and bad situations he's had to deal with. And I think it's ironic that we're sitting here the same, you know, week that they announced that they're retiring Art Monk's jersey, because I think there are so many similarities and comparisons you can have between Art Monk the player in the, you know, when he was here and Terry McLaurin today.
When you look at what's going on here, do you think this is going to become standard operating procedure in terms of the way that they're going to play hardball with their players, or do you think this is something that's Terry specific?
You know, this is the first big deal that they've really had to iron out, and they have to think about this deal in the, you know, in the big picture with, you know, how they're going to build this team and with the other contracts that might be coming up next year with Frankie Louvu or Laremy Tunsil and whoever else may come. But there's also a side of it where, you know, this might be NFL protocol. This might be what happens around the league with other superstars and other players, you know, who have been longtime players on their teams. But what frustrates me about it is that here in Washington, you're just starting to make that turn. You're just starting to go from being the embarrassing burgundy and gold, you know, franchise that they were for 30 years to, you know, they won some football games last year. They're starting to do things the right way. Fandom is starting to come back. You know, this era of good feelings is just starting. And to have this, you know, blip in the road is frustrating to me, because despite how everyone else does things, that doesn't mean you have to do that here. And the fact that they haven't talked in a month is not the best news in the world, because it means that they're not even particularly necessarily close, probably, in what both sides are looking for. And so, you know, it's a tough thing to see, because, you know, we know who Terry is, and listening to the emotion in his voice yesterday when he was at Eastern Motors talking about, you know, all the milestones in his life that have happened in the Washington area, growing up, buying a home, getting married, going from a third round pick to a, you know, every year 1,000-yard receiver, going from the dregs of the world at quarterback throwing the ball to him to having, you know, a potential, you know, NFL superstar throwing to him. He deserves every opportunity to get paid. And again, as long as that number isn't a, you know, astronomical number, you know, if it's a matter of a couple mil, I'm willing, because of the player that he is and the person that he is and the leader he is in that team, to extend myself a little bit for him.
Mitch, have you guys discussed much this whole second-round picks not signing type deal? Like, this is a really massive sports story, and I think we're occupied with a lot of other things, understandably, but Trey Amos isn't alone. I guess, what, it's 29 of his other buddies haven't signed just yet? What is going on with the second-round picks?
Yeah, listen, it's a wild situation, because we actually are seeing it a little bit with the first-rounder, Shamar Stewart out of Cleveland. You know, he's back practicing at Texas A&M apparently all summer, and starting to look at, you know, whether he should or could go back to school. The whole NIL world has turned things upside down, because players are making money and not happy to just be slotted where they should be slotted. I think particular to Trey Amos, what's interesting or what's important about it is a corner who might be able to step in and start right away. These are the reps that he needs. These are the training camp reps that a corner needs to get prepared and learn how to play this game at a professional level. And I don't know what the tipping point's going to be, what the hinge point is to start getting these second round deals done. But I can sit here and live with Terry McLaurin not necessarily practicing in training camp, because he's a guy who has been there and done that, and obviously will be able to step in and play. Those reps being missed by Trey Amos would be huge, and I think detrimental to a very, very thin position on this Washington secondary. And so, you know, we're sitting here talking about whether Trey Amos is going to sign and be there. There's a lot of question marks there in the secondary, particularly a corner for them. And I'm as concerned about those reps as I am about Terry and what's happening with his contract.
Mitch, appreciate the time. Always great insight.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me, guys.
See you, buddy.